As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder, coming to you, not live, recorded from Panama City. I am Sam Staskel, he is Paul Tenorio, and we are speaking to you in the hours after the U.S. men's national team's loss, 1-0 loss at Panama at Estadio Rommel Fernandez. Paul, this was not a good showing for the U.S. men's national team. They had 5 shots in this game. None of them were on goal. First time that's happened in a World Cup qualifier in 28 tries. That streak goes all the way back to a 2013 match at Azteca against Mexico. 7 changes to the starting lineup that beat Jamaica on Thursday. They didn't take. The performance was bad pretty much almost entirely across the board for this national team. Basically, nothing really went right. They didn't allow many chances to Panama. So defensively, you know, they weren't awful. The pressing was a little wonky in the first half for sure. But they weren't conceding a ton of chances. But other than that, there's not really anything to look at this game and take away and feel really good about. But let's talk about it. What's your big picture kind of takeaway from this one, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think there has to be questions about the ideas of rotation for the men's national team. Like, what is the best strategy? Because rotation has to be a part of what you do in these windows, right? Like, it has to be. You're playing 3 games in 7 days. If you don't rotate, you're taking a massive risk of long-term injuries, of players wearing down over time, of players wearing down in the third game and the performance suffering as a result, especially when you look at this window. They played in a very hot Austin in the first game. Tonight was brutal in Panama. The humidity was crazy. And so you would be basically saying that we're going to play with no energy in the third game if you're not rotating. But the question you have to ask yourself is, how do you consider momentum to be a part of the window? How do you try to weigh the number of players, the maximum number of players you rotate?
Yeah.
How do you manage those minutes better? And then I think part of it also comes down to team selection, roster selection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my opinion, as an example, I don't think Greg Berhalter could have anticipated necessarily that Kellen Acosta was going to be so bad tonight as he was.
Yeah,
like, he was one of the better players on the field for the U.S. in 2 finals this summer against Mexico.
Yeah, and to be fair, like if we're going to focus on process here, not result, which I think is a good way to take it, no one saw Kellen Acosta in the 11 and was like, oh, the idea of Kellen Acosta starting, that's ridiculous. No one was upset about that. Maybe they were upset about Tyler Adams not being in and Kellen Acosta playing the 6, and that's a different discussion that we can have, but no one was mad that Kellen Acosta is starting.
Right. And I think even when you look at Sebastian Legette, who a lot of people have problems with him starting in general.
People were mad about that one.
He was very poor in the last window against Canada. And then he was very good when he came in against Honduras, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's always been poor for the national team. I know some people will argue that. I'm also sorry if we're hearing that noise in the background when I'm talking. My hotel chair is like this close to falling apart, like so close to just like absolutely collapsing while I sit here.
That would be a really apt metaphor for what we went through at the game tonight, 100%. Or what the U.S. went through at the game tonight.
If I fall, it's, you know, it's not out of exhaustion.
I think Paul would start crying if his chair broke on him.
It's been a long night. But, you know, I don't know. I struggle with it because I think you have to rotate in these windows if you're the U.S. And I think there is a level of confidence that comes with the way the U.S. performed in the Gold Cup with a totally rotated squad and the belief that guys like George Bello and Mark McKenzie and Kellen Acosta and Sebastian Legette and Jossie Zardes could get the job done. Tim Weah, who was great in Austin and did not have it tonight.
No.
So where do you put the blame for that?
68 minutes.
Where do you put the blame?
Man.
I mean, is it about blame? I mean, I don't know.
Let me answer your first question. Where do you put it? I think it's multifaceted. First of all, the players weren't good. They weren't. And like, it's not Greg Berhalter's fault that Kellen Acosta couldn't trap a ball tonight. And Kellen Acosta spoke to media and he was like, I was poor. I was bad tonight. And like, that's on me. Right? It's not his fault that Tim Weah, who was great the other night, and again, who no one had an issue with starting, couldn't find the game at all. He had 17 touches in 68 minutes. It's the second lowest of any starter behind Zardes. Right? Now, if you want to say, well, maybe Bello shouldn't be on this roster. Right? Maybe they should have called in a different left back. Maybe Sergiño Dest should have played left back tonight. And you play Anthony Robinson at left back in Columbus. And you use DeAndre Yedlin and Shaq Moore at right back in the two games. Well, I'll listen to that argument for sure. You know, I thought it was strange, Paul, I know you did too, that he subbed on Yedlin for Moore in the second half instead of bringing on Dest for Bello in the second half. We thought that was a bit odd. Now, who knows? Maybe Moore was feeling something. We don't know that for certain, right? But who to blame? The players didn't perform. That's first and foremost. Second part, I think, is when you rotate seven, right? That's a lot. Like, that is a lot. And I don't know that I would have rotated all of those guys. If I was Berhalter, Pepe, I think, for one, I would have started. I was surprised Areola started, you know? And I'm actually fine. Berhalter explained that one. He's like, we basically viewed Aaronson and Areola as one player for this match in Panama because they both gave so much on Thursday physically against Jamaica. He's like, we thought both of them could go 45 minutes. So the plan was to play Paul in the first half and Brendan in the second. And that was always the plan. So I was actually fine with that approach, honestly. But man, I think it just really hammers home a few things, but one being how important Tyler Adams is to this team. Like, he is so important to this team and just everything they do. He makes the midfield so different. So different. And you saw it right away when he came in, those first 10 minutes of the second half. Those were the USMNT's best 10 minutes of the game, really. Then they give up the goal, and Panama's able to kind of sit and defend a little bit more, pack it in. Things change. But that's, I mean, it's a basic take, and it's one that has been said ad infinitum. But Tyler Adams, super important to the US men's national team. Who knew? So I don't know. Where's the blame? A lot of it with the players for their performance, some of it with Berhalter for taking risks that didn't pay off.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also worth noting when we talk about the depth of this national team and rotation, I think what got underplayed here in Berhalter's team selection was the fact that four starters were unavailable to him, period. They weren't in the country. You know, Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna, Weston McKennie and Anthony Robinson. And why does that matter? I'm going to leave Anthony Robinson out of this equation for now. The U.S. has, I think, in my opinion, four players who are used to the expectation placed upon them that they have a certain level that they don't drop under. And they might not always change the game or impact the game in having goals or assists. They may not have their best game every outing, but there is a level of expectation and I think also a level of intimidation, really, that they bring by being there because of their reputations and their clubs that they play for overseas. And when you take all of those players out of a lineup at once, it has a real impact on the team. It has an impact on how teams think of you, how they play you. I think when you lose that type of energy, and it's not like, I don't think that it's necessarily like a conscious thing. I don't think it's like a conscious team thing within the team itself even. But I think for me, you needed Tyler Adams on the field in this game because of so much rotation, because of the standard that he brings.
Yeah.
And if Weston was in the lineup and Tyler wasn't, I think that it would have been a lesser impact. Or if one of those four guys. And so when we talk about squad rotation, what I think was missing from this group was a leader who you expect to raise their game. And Sam, you and I were talking when this lineup came out. I think it was on our live allocation Twitter room. Or maybe it was just us talking.
No, we talked about it on the show, about the opportunity for some of these guys.
There were some tests for these players. Can you be the guy?
And then all of them failed.
Tim Weah, like, I felt like Brendan Aaronson has shown that when those guys are out, he can be the guy. And he's another guy who wasn't on the field, right? So you have all these guys who have proved it, that they can be the guy, that they can carry that responsibility. And none of those players was on the field.
Yeah, Weah, Legette.
And so you're testing Acosta, all of these players. Can you Musa step up and be the guy? This was Musa's first chance to be the guy. And he's 18 years old. It's a big test for a kid that young.
There's going to be some ups and downs.
It's his second qualifier. So I'm not saying that you cannot give him that test. But I think that you do it the same way you did with Brendan Aaronson, where Brendan Aaronson was doing it with Christian out, but you know, there were other players on the field.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, man. Like, the best teams in the world at, like, developing young players, the way they bleed them, they don't throw a team of 10, 18-year-olds on the field at the same time, right? They try and maximize the potential for that 18-year-old to have success by putting two of them on the field with 9 veterans. And the U.S. doesn't have that luxury.
Yeah, but this was, and Greg Berhalter pointed out, this was an older team that played tonight than the one that played
Austin. I'll be curious what the qualifying caps looked like.
They had a lot of, I mean, there's not a lot of qualifying caps on this team in general.
Period.
But they had Ariola out there. They had Legette out there. They had Zardes out there.
Yeah, but man, you're right. It's Adams and McKennie, right? It's like, they're the best players on the team, and there are not.
You just needed one of those guys, and even Aaronson at this point. One of those guys who you kind of know what they're going to bring. And when he brought them on at halftime, why did everyone think that the level was going to rise? Because those guys bring that. And so the rotation, like, if you're going to treat – I mean, again, this is hindsight 2020, certainly. But if you're going to treat Aaronson and Ariola like one player – You start Aaronson.
Maybe play Brendan,
Because he brings that. Or you say, okay, we only want to play Tyler 45 minutes. We'll play him the first half.
Now, you could give up a goal in the second and everyone would be, what are you doing, right? But no, it's fine. Maybe play one of them the first, one of them the second, right? No, it's a point well taken.
There just had to be a way to weigh those guys. You cannot take all of that.
Yes, you can't take all of them out.
You were already missing 3. And so does that put extra stress on Brendan Aaronson and Tyler Adams to play more minutes than you would like? Yes. Does it mean that they maybe play a lesser role than you would prefer against Costa Rica? That Brendan Aaronson has to come off the bench against Costa Rica? Yes, but at least you know Weston's going to be on the field in that game. And Tyler will start. And whatever, you know, you have that domino effect. But I think the issue with the rotation to me wasn't how many players. It came down to
Which players?
Those players, those five, in my opinion, those five guys. And actually, Miles Robinson, I think, has that to a certain degree, but I think there was
Although the center backs weren't the problem.
They were
tonight.
Fine. They, like, in the list of the things that went wrong, like, that was low. Yeah.
Good save.
I censored myself there. But, like, those five guys, you have to have one, preferably two, on the field at all times, I think.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's dive a little bit further into the actual game itself. One of the things that I can't believe we haven't mentioned yet, but that really stuck out from the beginning almost, was the intensity or lack thereof for the men's national team. And so if you're going to run out a team of second choice guys, right? Let's just call it what it is. These are not the normal starters. It's the B team. Well, if nothing else, you expect them to bring the heat. You know, to really bring fire and intensity and fight and work. And they didn't do that. You know, Berhalter, he talked about it after the game against Jamaica. He was like, everything that we did tonight was great. Excuse me, Paul. I might sneeze here. Take it away.
I think that there is a base level
right
of expectation. Good. I'm glad you're okay. There's a base level of expectation with that group that you bring the one thing that you should be counted on to bring.
Yeah. Which is effort and intensity and match their fire. And Berhalter talked about it after Jamaica. I mean, he said he warned them. He warned them in the locker room and he warned them again in the press conference with us. He said, everything about tonight was pretty good. Happy with the performance, proud of the guys, blah, blah, blah. But the trap is going to be us thinking we're great. The trap is going to be us thinking we already qualified for the World Cup. If we do that, we'll get our ass kicked in Panama. Well, look what happened. They got their ass kicked, and they didn't match the intensity at all. Kellen Acosta talked about it yesterday, on Saturday. He was like, we got to match their intensity. We got to. Weah talked about it. Yeah, Panama, we know they're going to come out shooting for us. They knew.
So it's not like the message was lost.
No, they knew. They just didn't do it, you know? And I don't know why that was. I don't know if that's like a youth thing. I don't know if it's just like, hey, sometimes this happens. I don't know. But it's a little bit of the immaturity of this group, I think, Paul.
And to your point, it was in the Behind the Badge video that U.S. Soccer produced.
Crest.
Behind the Crest. And it went back to when they first arrived in camp, right? This whole idea of trying to restructure goal setting for this team after the last window of talking about 9 points. It was like a reset of mindset. We're going to go game by game and just win this game.
Yeah, the
and
old cliche.
The game, right?
Yeah.
The cliche. But the idea was, You perform in this first game, and then you have to take all of that intensity and bring it up a notch again, get up again. And Greg talked about it. Greg Berhalter talked about it in that video. You have to recover and be ready again mentally. Mm-hmm. He didn't even talk about physicality in that speech.
Yeah,
he said you have to come back mentally, and that was lacking. And
it's like they were a little hungover.
To your point, Sam, like some of these players, that is what they are bringing.
Yeah. Effort and intensity. I mean, Aaronson brings it.
Yeah, but right? I mean, like, there's Aaronson also brings goals and assists. There are certain players
but
who don't
bring
that.
If he can bring both, then the minimum has to be the one. That's controllable. Effort's controllable. Intensity's controllable. You know, sometimes you're going to have an off night with your touch, with your form, all that. But the other stuff you can control. So that's the part that really stuck out to me.
And I've been kind of going back and forth about this, and I wrote about it in my story tonight. I kind of ended on it, which is that in Panama the last few days, I've asked all of our Uber drivers. I talked to a police officer outside of the stadium, a journalist, a couple journalists. I watched the local news channel. They were doing some interviews in the mall here, actually next to where we're staying. And you know,
in where are we staying in a mall? I don't, it's not entirely clear.
We're like attached
Doesn't
to
matter.
A mall. We are attached.
It's a very fancy mall.
The questions were all, what are the expectations? What do you think should happen tomorrow or in 2 days when Panama and the U.S. meet? And the answers were almost universally the same. It was, look, Panama, we haven't been playing great. We've been kind of bringing in a new squad, not a whole generation of. They're introducing some younger players, but there are some veterans on this team. But there is that transition happening right now. And their belief was like, aren't necessarily ready yet, and the U.S. is a very good team, so a draw would be a good result. The number of times I was told a draw would be a good result, a draw would be a good result. We're building, yes, we want to compete for fourth place. We think we're going to compete for fourth. We think the top three will be Mexico, USA, Canada. But we also are building toward 2026. We think this manager should get another 4 years no matter what, blah, blah, blah. That was the message. And one result tonight, I'll tell you what the message was in the way the crowd was reacting with the final whistle and the way they were singing during the course of the game.
We got another shot at the World Cup.
The belief was back. It wasn't about, hey, maybe we should start looking to 26, or hey, maybe we should fight for fourth place. It was like, no, maybe we can do this. And it actually started to happen early in the game. Like, that was the biggest issue.
That was the thing, Paul. And I want to talk about this, and I wrote about this in my piece. The atmosphere before the game was nothing like it was in El Salvador. Nothing. And it wasn't really even anything like it was in Honduras, which wasn't as good as El Salvador before the game. It was pretty subdued. Like, these people were hesitant. They were going in with their guard up. They were like, hey, you know, like, yeah, it'd be great if we get a result, but we're kind of expecting to lose. And Panama jumped out, and they were on the front foot from the start. And you saw it. It was in the third minute. I took a note. It was in the third minute. The U.S. gave up a goal kick, and they, like, basically hadn't completed a pass yet. And Walker Zimmerman, he turns after the goal kick, and he's turning to Matt Turner, and he's turning to his teammates, and he's, you know, kind of doing the thing where he's got his hands, and he's, like, trying to calm everybody down. He's tapping his hands towards the ground, pushing him towards the ground. He's trying to calm everyone down. It's the third minute. They haven't gotten a hold of anything. You're thinking, okay, it's early. They'll respond. They never really responded. And by the 10th minute, that place was rocking. And like we were both taking videos after the goals. Maybe we'll tweet them out at some point. It was wild. Once it got there, it was absolutely nuts in the stadium. And the U.S. allowed that to happen. That was not something that happened when they were entering the game. That was not a given.
You could see the way I wrote it was, you could see Panama's confidence going up with each shot or turnover and counterattack that would even lead to like a goal kick, you know, like you said, like a corner. Mm-hmm. You could see the confidence, and then the buzz went from the field confidence to, you could feel that feeling in the stands. Where when a player picks up a ball, there's a buzz, there's a belief that something good is going to happen for your team.
Yeah.
And then that started to build and crescendo. And then,
yeah, it's symbiotic.
And then the chances started to happen. And then that started to build. And that gave it to the team, right? They were feeding off of each other. And by the end of that game, like I said, the attitude, the discussion around the team and its ability and its hopes and its dreams, as one sign said, you know, because the dream of getting to Russia was back. And I think it's worth remembering how one game and one half changed the discussion about this team in September. So the interesting part of qualification is that in 3 days, the U.S. will play at home. And if they go out and they stomp Costa Rica at home, the attitude and the discussion about this
tonight,
team,
Costa Rica,
will be different, right? It'll be different.
Yeah, it changes. It's a roller coaster.
And you've got to manage that stuff. And you've got to try to understand that that's a part of this. And you have to navigate that. And but it was like, to me, I think the biggest problem was that, you know, I'm glad to hear you wrote about it, because I thought the biggest mistake the U.S. made in not matching the energy and the emotion was that they allowed it to happen by not matching that energy from the jump. If they had just played a really solid first 15 minutes, if they had played better in the first 15 minutes, it would have taken a lot longer for that crowd, or maybe they wouldn't have at all ever gotten to that level. And instead, they created by their kind of
it helped. It worked. It helped the team,
start.
And the team fed them. And,
created this atmosphere where they were feeding off of each other, and all of a sudden it was like a crazy environment.
Cauldron. Yeah. And it was hot. It was hot. That was a real thing. It was very humid. It's very hot. But hey, these are professional athletes, and it was very humid and very hot for Panama as well.
They
played in El Salvador in a monsoon the other day. They lost 1-0. They're coming off short rest too. They barely rotated at all. 9 of 11 guys that started in El Salvador for them started again. This is a team that hasn't rotated very much throughout qualifying. I think they've made a total of 4 changes in five games. So, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. Paul, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll kind of dive more into the nitty gritty. I do want to talk about kind of some of the tactical things and technical failings of the U.S. in this game. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
And we are back. Allocation Disorder coming to you from Panama after the U.S. lost 1-0 to Panama in qualifying. First loss in 14 matches. First loss since May. It was not a good performance, but bigger picture, U.S. is still in a strong position in qualifying. Tied for second now with Panama. 1 point ahead of Canada. 1 point ahead, right, of Canada. And 3 points. 3 points behind Mexico?
They are 3 points behind Mexico. They are tied in second with Panama. Though they have a goal differential advantage, and they're 1 point ahead of Canada.
There we go. So still, it's not like the world is ending here in terms of qualifying, but there's only 14 of these things. Every single one is important. And the one we saw in Panama on Sunday night was not good by in any way, shape, or form. We've already talked about the rotation. We talked about the intensity. Paul, let's talk about a little what actually happened on the field, right? So the game starts, and Panama is kind of all over the U.S. from the beginning. You know, we sit next to each other in the press box at these games, so we get to have our own personal allocation disorder for 90 minutes before we do it with you guys. And there are a lot of things that were said back and forth between the two of us. The midfield trio of Kellen Acosta, Sebastian Legette, and Yunus Musa stood out in a bad way very quickly. It was not good. Paul, what did you see from them tonight, or what didn't you see from them tonight?
Well, a good touch. Ability to pass. I mean, there was a lot going wrong soccer-wise in the midfield. They were not clean on the ball. They weren't moving fast enough. They weren't...
They didn't get their spacing right. Their choices
of passes, their turnovers in bad positions, their decisions of when to dribble. I mean, I'm looking back at my notes from the game, And it starts almost immediately. You know, Musa turns it over in the 9th minute that led to a counterattack for Panama. That was one moment where the crowd started to get into in the 14th minute. There was another great chance for Panama that led to the ball getting to the across to the far post that very nearly led to a goal. That came through poor midfield play from the U.S. that turned the ball over. So, you know, these were big problems where they couldn't control the midfield. They couldn't control the ball. There were moments where I thought they were trying to play through the fullbacks very early on. Before that Musa turnover, George Bello was struggling when they played him the ball to advance it and to do something with it.
It looked like they lost faith in him. They didn't want to pass him the ball after a while.
It didn't go out there very often, starting in probably somewhere around the 20th minute or so. And then they really struggled defensively in their spacing and where they pressed. And Panama kind of created a very simple pattern to break out of the press, because the way they were pressing is the wingers were coming to press the center backs inside, and the fullback for the U.S. was pushing up on the striker or the winger to release to them to kind of try to prevent that pass.
And they weren't really pushing up, though, because the winger was stationed so high. Well, the wingers were level.
Yeah, the fullback was pushing into that space.
The Panama fullback.
So as soon as the winger released, the Panama fullback released up the wing. And then what happened was the right back was stuck in a 2v1 almost immediately. And the forward would check back into space. The center back would play the ball to the forward, and he would play one touch over to the fullback. And then they were out of pressure. They were in space, and they were 2v1.
And they're racing. They're racing 2v1 with the winger and the fullback.
Yep. Against Shaq Moore most of the time.
And the midfielders were not doing anywhere near a good enough job of supporting that initial pressure and sliding out to the fullback. Because Moore and Bello couldn't step, because if they stepped, they're leaving the winger high, and the two center backs are occupied with their own marks, so all four defenders are marking a guy. They're not free. It wasn't good. And the press wasn't quick enough either from Areola and Weah. It wasn't good enough. And Berhalter spoke about that after the game too. He was basically like, yeah, we didn't have the pop. He's like, we didn't have the intensity. We didn't have it in our legs. And they changed how they pressed in the second half. And things got a lot better in that regard. They stopped getting exposed on this. I mean, Paul, how many times do you think that happened? It felt like it was like 10 times in the first half that they just had this simple build out.
Yeah, it was happening too often. And there was a point maybe in the 30th minute or so, somewhere around there, where they kind of flip-flopped who was where in midfield, and they moved Musa to the right side, and then Musa was pinched out to try to end that. And it did. It helped when he was doing that. That was the adjustment they had to make. But that also is a recognition that has to come from the midfield. It shouldn't be Greg Berhalter yelling like, hey, this is happening over and over again. Will you step out as a midfielder instead of standing in space in the middle of the field? Like, that's something that needs to be recognized by Kellen Acosta earlier, because I think it was him that was on that right side earlier. So, or by Yunus Musa, one of the two has to do it. Yeah. And
I think Leggett was over there at points too.
Yeah, Leggett as well. I mean, all three of those guys, they struggled in their on the ball ability, and I thought they struggled in kind of how they were pressing and how they were defending. But really, what they were doing or not doing on the ball that really hurt the U.S. today. I mean, there were some really poor turnovers, just really poor turnovers, bad decisions to dribble into pressure, times when the ball is coming to their feet, they're not checking over their shoulder, they're turning into pressure or turning into turnovers in bad spots. And it was happening over and over and over again. And even some of the passes they were playing, like they were trying to chip the ball to wingers into space and they were hitting them short. I mean, it was just a really poor performance overall.
Very off. Yeah, and when the U.S. was trying to build up in possession, Panama was pretty smart. It wasn't anything super complex. They did something similar to what Canada did in the game, where Canada was, you know, really marking Tyler Adams out of the build-up in possession. Canada was doing the same thing with Acosta, right? So they're like, okay, Walker Zimmerman, okay, Mark McKenzie, you guys can have the ball. That's fine. We're not going to let you pass it to Kellen Acosta. Go somewhere else. Okay, first options to the fullback. The wingers were kind of shutting that lane down. And the eights, Musa and Leggett, were not doing a good enough job of finding the space. And so Zimmerman had a really good quote that I'll read part of after the game, kind of about this. I'm trying to find it right now. My apologies. It was a long quote, so I'm not gonna read the whole thing. But here's what he said. He said, part of what we wanted to do was to get on the ball and to drive into space and to try and commit the Panama winger to either go to the outside back, so cut off that passing lane. And in that case, I, Walker Zimmerman, can find the pocket there with the number 8. You know, he can play it vertically. Or if the winger sticks to the 8, then I can bypass him to the fullback and we can try and start a wing progression, much like we were just talking about with Canada or with Panama. But he went on. There were a few times when the winger stayed narrow and I was able to bypass him to Shaq and we tried to go down the line. But there were fewer times that the middle opened up. I wasn't able really to find the middle. And when that was the case, we were trying to find a weak side winger for our diagonal. So, you know, Paul, you kept pointing this out. Zimmerman spent a lot of the first half hitting long diagonal balls to Tim Weah, mostly, or Giassi's artists, that were just like Hail Marys. They had no hope. He was just like, well, I don't really have another option. Sometimes he did and he ignored it, but a lot of times he didn't. And so he was just hoofing it long and hoping. And like that, it wasn't good enough. It was just kind of basic stuff, man. It wasn't anything crazy. If I'm picking up on it, it's not that complicated.
Yeah, it was a problem. And there were just, I think there were just no good options, right? Like the whole half was being played out and it felt like there were a couple moments where I thought Walker Zimmerman should have just played the ball to Shaq more rather than hit that long diagonal because, you know, yes, the passing lane wasn't perfect and no, he's not going to be able to take a right-footed touch upfield without getting into trouble. But what he does is he just plays it back to you one time and then you've maybe reset the defensive shape of Panama, and you hope that the eight will have opens a time to get into that space centrally, right? That's what I thought the preferred decision would have been for Zimmerman. But to his point here, you're looking at it happening. You're not the runs aren't going to where you want them to be. The movement's not there, and so you pick your head up and you say, "Okay, I'm going to ping this 70-yard diagonal to the other side into their half of the field and hope that somebody can make a play and make a difference."
And you start pressing. Comes of it. You start forcing stuff.
And it just was indicative of the lack of movement, as Walker Zimmerman said, and you know the lack of composure, and the lack of a performance. And he said it. He said whether that's you know that's something we need to take more pride in. Whether that's our movement off the ball, our composure on the ball, we need to have the confidence to play, and that's something that we were not at our best at tonight.
I mean, you sort of said this earlier in a way. You were kind of hinting at it. The U.S. really didn't have a lot of soccer players out there tonight. Maybe that sounds a little harsh.
I said it like 8 times on the press box. I mean, like, yeah. There was no one that was trying to play. That is known for. I mean, Sebastian Legette, theoretically. But his penchant with the national team for playing backwards.
He just needs to be more aggressive.
In games where he is being asked to be the guy. It's bad. It's like so almost bad. Like he doesn't want to accept that responsibility. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like.
And when he came in Honduras with nothing to lose after a brutal first half, and it was, hey, we got to go get it. We got to go attack. And he had to be aggressive, right? Like, then we saw it. Like, he's a good technical player. He can be good. I don't know what it is. He's got to change that mindset when he gets on the field, I think.
But I think it comes back again. And I was saying about the soccer players, like you just said, but I think it comes back to having one of those guys on the field.
Yeah.
It does.
Lead by example.
And I just think that that's something that this U.S. team is just going to have to acknowledge. And hopefully, I know it hasn't happened often, but hopefully you don't have another game where 3 of the 5 must-haves are just immediately removed from the equation at like you can't even consider them. And then you're
but
those are the 2, by the way, that have had to step up over and over again. Brendan Aaronson played all 3 games in September and impacted all 3 games. Tyler Adams didn't come off the field in September. At a certain point, you need those other guys to step up. And I'm not even going to count Christian because Christian played as much as he could and tried to play through a really clearly messed up ankle. Gio had a hamstring issue.
Yeah.
But
has. Know, yeah.
Has a hamstring issue. Weston, you know, obviously last window, very controllable. So
this window,
less so. But I just feel like they're, you know, those are the guys right now that you just need a couple of them on the field at all.
Yeah,
times.
I mean, we tallied it up the other day. By the end of this window, Reyna, Pulisic, and McKennie combined 18 games that they could have been available for. They will have been available for 6 together at the end of this window. So that makes it tough, but it's a team sport, man. Other guys get to step up. And even with those absences, this UN's men's national team has the players with the profile to go into Panama and play so much better than they did tonight. So much better. And I think that's where the disappointment is.
And look, at the end of the day, I look at this performance and I say, the door was opened for Luca De La Torre to get more of a run out there. Yeah. For Christian Roldan, even, who came on as a sub and didn't do much and actually wasn't great.
Matthew Hoppe, we didn't see him.
The door was open.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I mean.
And you know what door was open? The door to whatever doctor you need to get all those players into to get them on the field. But, you know, they need, I think that there are going to be questions. I have bigger questions now about, can you trust Sebastian Legette, in a big game, in a big moment, to step into that starting job in a rotation. I don't think you can after tonight. George Bello, I don't think you can. It's time for James Sands to get a call, in my opinion.
And Joe Scally.
Joe Scally, thank you. I think
it's late, folks. Sorry.
Yeah, I think even Kellen Acosta, I think Kellen Acosta is a player who is a good complementary player next to Weston and Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different role than being the guy in that midfield that he was today.
Yep.
100%. And even for Yunus Musa, you saw the difference. Yunus starting next to Weston and Tyler could play freer. He had Aronson running like crazy and Areola all around him. He had two veteran players, even though they're young. And it was a different type of game. It asks more. And I just don't think you can do – I think we learned about certain players that you just don't ask those questions of them anymore.
Yeah. I think we're also – one positive I will say here, I think we've learned a little bit about Walker Zimmerman this window too, in a good way. You know, is he a spectacular passer or anything like that? Like, no. But he's a good defender. He's a very good defender. Good athlete. Really good in the air. Excellent in the air. And he can do a job for this team. You know, is he your top two center back? Probably not. But he's respected. He's a captain. He's a leader. And he's done pretty well, in my opinion, these last two games. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the USMNT. And we'll look ahead to Wednesday in Columbus, Ohio, against Paul's beloved Ticos. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we are back, final segment of this Panama edition of Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekel. He is Paul Tenorio. We are talking about the USMNT's 1-0 loss in World Cup qualifying at Panama. Paul, you've said this a few times on this show about the depth, and you're talking about Pulisic and Reyna and Adams and McKennie and who else? Brendan Aronson, yeah. And you're talking about how if some of those guys are missing, as they are right now, you know, there's a relatively significant drop, as we saw tonight, right? And both in terms of talent and skill and mentality and just kind of the overall team dynamic. And this brings me to a larger point that I don't know why I'm throwing in your lap right now, but I think it's important for USMNT fans to put in perspective. While there is a lot of excitement about this generation of players, and they are very talented and they are very good, and they're playing at clubs that we've never seen players play at in the history of American soccer, and all that's great. Like, this team still isn't like a world beater. This isn't one of the top 10 teams in the world. You know, if you look at the FIFA rankings, I think they're currently in 11th, but I went through and you go through the top 25 today, they're probably in around 20 or so, right? Realistically, if you look at those teams, and they can compete with teams to 15 and they'll give them a good game. But those top 15 teams in the world, they're going to be big favorites probably even against a full strength USMNT. And so I just kind of wanted to lay that out there because I feel like that gets lost. You know, you watch the top national teams in the world, the US is a cut below that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not me saying that this team sucks or anything like that. It doesn't. There are some good players, and it's exciting what's happening, especially with the youth, and we should be excited about it. But it's important to keep in perspective, especially when you go to a place like Panama and have a performance like tonight, when you have to rely on that depth. So I don't know. Paul, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you learned a bit about the pool. And I kept coming back to this when I was writing my story. Like, I understand why Greg Berhalter did it. I understand it. I get the balance that you're playing with, but also the confidence that came after the Gold Cup. They went undefeated in the Gold Cup. They won every game, not drawing undefeated. Like, that was against CONCACAF teams. They found a way to get results
at home.
And for me, tonight was about getting a result. That's what they were supposed to do. If they had been a draw, I mean, Greg Berhalter said we wanted to win, but if they had gotten a point on the road, he would have been pleased. It would have been fine. If he had rested the guys he wanted to rest, it was very clear that the emphasis was put on Costa Rica.
Yes.
You know, you have to protect the home games. And he said, okay, Anthony Robinson, Wes McKinney are already there resting. I've got guys worn down from playing in Austin. I'm going to rest them in this game. We're going to come out at home against Costa Rica flying. It was like, I don't think you can deny that based on the rotation that happened tonight in Panama. But I think, you know, there has to be a reassessment of that pool. And again, to me, it opens the door for other players to try to push for those depth spots. That's also a good thing. Like, it's a good thing to say,
we need to shouldn't see be set in stone.
Matthew. And the big dilemma is that there aren't friendlies until after qualification to bring some of these new players in. But you have to give a chance to Chris Richards at some point because you need to see what he can do. You have to give Matthew Hoppe a chance in these qualifiers to see, can he do more than what we saw from other players, Tim Weah or
a Roldan. I thought that was curious that Roldan came over ahead of Hoppe.
Someone tonight. To, you know, you have to give those players a chance. You have to go bring Joe Scallion and see, can he give us depth on the left back spot? You know, if Anthony Robinson's out and we're not going to play Serginho, you know, is he a guy who comes as a right back because he can play both spots? And he gives you another option. Like, those are questions that have to now be asked because the depth players you relied on in this game, they didn't step up. They didn't seize that moment. And the national team, international football, it's unforgiving in that way. You don't have enough of these opportunities in games that matter to mess around with, okay, you didn't do it in this game, well, let's try again. And like, I'll give you an example of that. Jackson Ewell in Nations League played in the semifinal and fell flat on his face.
I mean, that wasn't – Jackson Ewell had a lot of games.
Yeah, but in the games that matter, they gave him that opportunity, and he fell very, very flat. And you need to see a response where you need to see something. And McKenzie in the final, as poorly as he played in the first few minutes against Mexico, he responded, and he gave you enough to bring him back. Sebastian Legette, terrible against Canada, gave you something against Honduras. But tonight, I think, showed again – if you're going to play Sebastian Legette, you're bringing him on as a substitute in a game where, you know.
I don't know, man. He might have played himself out of the November camp tonight.
No, for sure. I'm saying if you did, you're not. I don't think you can start him after this. And so for me, it's just, it sounds harsh. It's one game, et cetera, but that's where we are, man. It's World Cup qualifiers. There's not a lot of wiggle room. And if we're going to be talking about U.S. not being a powerhouse, part of it is they shouldn't be yet. It's a super young team. They're going to need time to grow. But part of it is you have to build that depth to a point where the level doesn't drop as much as it did tonight. And so there are these players on the fringe who have this potential, well, let's see them. You know, let's see them. That they've now earned an opportunity based on the performances of others. And that's how I feel coming off of tonight.
It's I would have a hard time arguing with you on that. Let's talk a little bit. You sort of mentioned it. The saving grace of Sunday is that there's going to be a rested first choice team against Costa Rica on Wednesday night in Columbus. You know, you want to project the lineup, right? Matt Turner in goal, Anthony Robinson at left back, Miles Robinson and someone else at center back, Sergiño Dest at right back, Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, and I don't know, maybe Luca De La Torre gets a start.
Yeah,
in midfield.
That's what I'm talking
perhaps.
About. It's time to give someone else a chance.
Brendan Aaronson, Ricardo Pepi, and I don't know who the other winger will be. Maybe Matthew Hoppe gets a start in Columbus. So a couple of spots up for grabs, but most of those guys are your first choice players in this camp. And so that'll be good. And they'll be, most of them will be rested and they should be raring to go against the Costa Rica team that just won a game. Paul came back at home against El Salvador, restore a little pride to your country. For those of you who weren't here in Panama, I don't know why I said that. None of you were here. It was just me and Paul and some other people. We were hanging out the other night and Paul was just ranting and raving about Costa Rica and their head coach and how it's a mess. And then they went out and won tonight and, you know, a little bit of a different story heading into the game at lower.com field.
Yeah, I was ranting and raving about two players in particular who I said needed to be essentially
put some respect
out.
Put some respect on their names.
And Brian Ruiz and Celso Borges scored both goals tonight to give Costa Rica a win.
Couple of legends, so all-timers for Costa Rica, those guys. No,
I think Costa Rica, the issue has been very similar to the U.S. in 2014. There's been a real struggle to turn over the roster, to trust some of these younger players in these bigger moments, and that's led to some problems. Obviously, that's not the case tonight. Some of those older players did deliver.
Little magic left in those boots yet.
I think that's the risk and the reward that you'll see against Costa Rica in Columbus. The risk when you play a lot of the guys that they're choosing, a lot of the veterans they're choosing, is that they're on the back end. And just like the U.S. in 2014, you can sometimes those veterans will do what they did against Panama and Orlando, where they play to the highest peak of their potential, and they score two goals and at home and bring you back for 3 points from behind from a deficit, right? And sometimes they are Trinidad, where they fall flat and
you
need to inject new energy.
And you never know when you're going to fall off the cliff to Trinidad.
And really in 2014 for the U.S., it was more often than not the negative than it was the positive. In 18, it was more often the negative than the positive. And I think that it'll be the same for Costa Rica in this window. But they do have experienced players. They do have a lot of MLS experienced players who know, you know, are going to feel comfortable playing in Columbus.
Luis Diaz on the team?
Yep. And
there
so
you go, Columbus player.
You know, there is an interesting dynamic there. And for the first time in this qualification cycle, really, since the very beginning of the first game maybe, they're going to come into this with confidence. And they still have Kaylor, who can keep them in any game at any time.
Yes, it's so a great equalizer. It's not, to have one of the world's best goalkeepers.
Yeah, it's not somebody you're going to roll over. They're going to make you earn it. But
they haven't conceded much.
Yeah, I mean, because you have Kaylor Navas in goal. I mean, he does so much for that team to keep them in games, and so it's going to be an interesting challenge. I'm very intrigued to see the lineup against the U.S., and I'm very intrigued to see how confidently this team approaches the game. Because again, I thought, you know, there are certain young players haven't been getting minutes. Manfred Ugalde said, I'm not accepting any call-ups because the coach was criticizing his performance in the last window. A young striker, 19-year-old striker playing in Holland right now, probably the most promising striker in the pool and in some time for Costa Rica. So the federation is kind of a mess, and there's all this stuff, and then boom, they get a big result, and now you're feeling differently.
Everyone feels good. So it's funny how it can change.
This is World Cup qualifying, man. This is what we're talking about.
Yes. So to step off the roller coaster here, real quick, I'll just reiterate what I said towards the top of the show. Yeah, it was a bad loss tonight. Yes, you can question Greg Berhalter and his decisions and the rotation and all of that stuff. Yes, you can criticize the players for their poor performance because they were poor. That being said, U.S. still in second place, right? Still tied for second with Panama. Are they exactly where they want to be? No. Does Wednesday's game become a lot bigger because of what happened in Panama tonight? 100%, right? But for now, they built up enough of a cushion in the first four games that tonight isn't the end of the world. So rest easy knowing that. And, you know, if there's another bad result on Wednesday in Columbus, then let the freak out commence, baby. But until then, I'm Sam. He's Paul. Paul, you got anything else to add, or you just trying to go to bed, man? Paul's trying to go to bed. I am too. Thanks for listening to Allocation Disorder. We'll be back on Wednesday night with a show from Columbus. Talk to you then.